Welcome to Tiny Monkey. I'm Adam Barrow. When talking to other balloonists, a lot of the conversations I hear are about our aging sport and how we need to find a new group of people to attract into our sport so it can survive and thrive. The second conversation topic is about the ever-increasing amount of regulation that we need to operate with. This makes entry to the sport cumbersome, not to mention expensive when it comes to maintaining a certified production aircraft. Today's guest, Leandro Corradini, founder and CEO of a new balloon company, Flydo, thinks they have the solution to this, lightweight sport aircraft. Leandro is a multidiscipline pilot and has been intimately involved with the paragliding and paramotoring worlds. His love of lightweight, personal aircraft led him to identify a gap in the ballooning market for this type of aircraft, so he decided to do something about it. After 2 years of planning and design, he launched his new light sport aircraft company, Flydo, 2 weeks ago, and a new balloon company was born. As you'll hear in this interview, Leandro is passionate but realistic about the innovation his company is delivering. He's identified his market as other sport aviation pilots, such as paragliders or glider pilots, and he's also looking at existing balloonists who want to downscale or are looking for something lighter for their recreational flying. I encourage you to have a look at his website or Facebook page, and for those of you attending Albuquerque, pop in and visit him at his stand at the event. You'll be amazed at what they're doing. Anyway, on with the interview. Welcome to Tiny Monkey, Leandro.
Thank you for the opportunity, Adam. I really appreciate your quick reaction after my launch has been great.
It's not every day that a new balloon manufacturer appears in the world, especially one that's doing some incredible things like you are with Flydo. So maybe you can just explain to the Auntie Monkey listeners just what the philosophy is behind Flydo and why you decided to start up the business.
Sure. So I'm a very passionate flyer and pilot of several different disciplines, you know. So at some point of my, let's say, hobby or passionate career of pilot, I jumped into the magic of balloons. Like almost everybody, every pilot at some point says, looks at the balloon and says, wow, that's magical. So the problems that I've missed, I've lacked the access somehow to the ballooning sport. And the more I investigated this balloon thing, the more I discovered that almost there is no balloon sport. There is no such a thing. So it's rather more like a business thing. It's strange, quite strange. So I started to investigate that, and I came up with the conclusion that globally there was something to be done there. Flydo, which we just launched 2 weeks ago after 2 years in the works, actually, with going through tough times because, well, we have been trying to innovate, really. Flydo is exactly that. It's ballooning for fun. It's ballooning made ultralight, as light as possible. Is ballooning made as compact as possible, as easy as possible to own, to operate. This is actually the answer to what I would have liked to expect or to purchase when I decided at some point in my life I want to try ballooning and I want to do it my next sport and see what's there. So I discovered, like with a bit of frustration at the beginning, but I discovered an opportunity, and accidentally it was probably the good time in my life to take some risks and say, why not? Let's go and try this out. I think I might have some good ideas to put in there. And I had the impression that most big manufacturers did not really focus too much in this lower end part of the market, which I can from another point of view understand, actually, because, well, the bigger the better for them, most probably. But I'm not from the big aviation. I'm from the fun, light and fun aviation world. So I wanted an answer for people like me.
Looking at your website and the videos and the product that you've got, it's it seems like that lightweight is absolutely the core principle of your whole idea, isn't it? It's really everything must be as light as possible while still being as safe as possible.
Right, exactly. So light, it's not the only thing, to be honest. It has been a major thing which allowed us to really go a long way into lightweight. So we are really much lighter than the nearest comparable balloon in the same size, of course. And same for the burner. For the basket, probably not that much at the end because, well, globally, I wanted a product that I can really deliver and still sleep well during the night. I want a safe product. I want all our future customers to be safe. So, for example, at some point I had to choose not to go light, but to go safe. And this is a good example for that is the padding, the protection of the basket is a good example. So where we can, we put as good materials as we can, as titanium, carbon fiber, composite sandwich, etc. in the protection. But we don't renounce to these side protection walls. I don't believe in the concept of a basket. I'm not happy in selling and delivering a basket that has no side protection.
Sure. So,
you could remove them and be still lighter, but I don't buy it. I would not buy it. You need to have this protection. It's just a matter of safety. And at the end, it's not that much more weight. We saved a lot from other sides.
Yeah.
You know, you need to find the right balance to reflect your philosophy and to make you comfortable and in selling a product. So.
And your design seems to be similar to the for the envelope. It seems to be similar to the old Balloon Works FlexNet system, where there's like a cord that runs to the crown ring down to the mouth of the balloon, as opposed to a tape. Right. Is that right? And that moves in between the. In between the fabric, so it allows the envelope to change shape a little bit.
I studied quite a lot when I started all of that, and I found some old patents from the USA, I think, where actually, yes, I've seen cords being used already. So I didn't go too much into details because at some point I'm somebody that I have my own ideas and sometimes sure. I really cannot speak because I have my 3D mind taking shape. So I have to wake up and go into 3D and do scratch. Things. I tried to apply my idea to it, but I had one thing sure, which is the materials to be used.
Yeah.
I come from paragliding as well, and we have some incredible materials in paragliding. Yeah. There has been tremendous evolution the last year, both in fabrics and both in lines. And here is the key lines. I found good lines that behave very good at high temperatures, that are well protected on the outside, but they are, however, so thin that I don't feel comfortable in sewing those lines together with the envelope. Mm-hmm. So we came up with a solution exactly where actually we hang the weight of the basket from our flying wires to little cords to these little lines that they make a 2.5 millimeters diameter. It's really nothing. So we hang the load from there, but we also keep attached the envelope as well, but from a separate way, because otherwise it would not be so so smooth. And so the envelope has to have a good tension to have a good visual result. The load must not be carried by that. So as the lines and the fabric are two different things, we can do some regulations and find this good compromise. So there has been quite a bit of fine-tuning at the end for this concept, but now we have achieved a good result and we are happy with it actually. And lighter, it's difficult.
Light. Well, I think at the moment you're using the French fabric, aren't you, from Porsche? Their fabric.
That's correct. Yes.
Well, how heavy is that fabric? Is that the the very lightweight, like the super lightweight paraglider, like 38 GSM, somewhere around there?
You are quite right. It's the 38 grams per wow. square meter, but this is not today the super, super light paragliding fabric. Nowadays, they have 27 and things like that. So once again, 27?
That's crazy light.
Yes. Yes, actually, the lower part of the paragliders are commonly made in even lighter, so 25, 27 wow. grams per square meter.
That's amazing.
It's absolutely. So it's another spot where we I said, okay, let's stop at 38. It's really good. I mean, I know from other manufacturers using it already, so it is a proven material. So let's stay there. There is margin for the future, but I'm not sure it will even be the way to go lower sure. down in weight.
And is the fabric, is it coated as well, Leandro, or is it just calendar, just pressed?
No, it's coated. There is a polyurethane coating okay. in it, actually.
Yeah.
And this is a nylon, so to answer those that are curious about nylon or polyester, this is a nylon fabric, so we have a good choice of colors for it. However, as we also do some printing, sublimation printing, mm-hmm. when it has to be printed, we go into polyester,
okay.
where we have the good material, which is the same weight, and we... So we can do whatever we want with printing over it, but we cannot do it on nylon, of course. In terms that the process of sublimation printing brings the temperature really, really high. So polyester is a material that even in production goes to high temperatures. So it doesn't care too much of this printing process. However, nylon, it would suffer a lot and it would lose some of its characteristics over the time, so
okay.
It's a rather matter of safety. Yeah.
So with all this lightweight, like you've got these really light flying lines, let's not call them flying wires anymore because they're not wire, the material you're using, have you tested that? What happens if you have a wind shear and the burner hits those ropes, let's call them ropes, do they melt? How much direct heat can they take?
Well, we use for that a specific material. It's Technora, is what actually Technora, is inside yeah. the core of those lines. Technora has given us a tremendous result, actually, for temperature carrying. So it's really all the load tests we did on lines, on every single material, we did it after heating. We put all material in the oven and then we do the test. So mm-hmm. we try to see the real conditions a lot. So all our load calculations and tests have been done considering heat.
Okay.
But heat is not that high for the standard of those materials, to mm-hmm. be honest. Heat in a balloon, I mean. We, of course, they would not be happy to have contact with the flame,
sure.
like no webbing or no balloon in the world.
Yeah.
This is for sure. So attention and care must be taken to take care of this material. And
yeah.
the lighter it is, the most, I would say.
Yeah.
So material is well adapted. It's tested in heat conditions. And the good thing I might add is that actually, might you have a damage on the line for some reason, you can change the line because it's not connected to the envelope. So you just... You connect on the bottom a new line, you pull the old line with the new one in it, and you have a new line, and you're ready to go again. So this is something interesting. You don't need to touch a sewing machine for that.
Yeah, that's great. I really love what you're doing because it's lightweight, which I really like this concept. And we are seeing some Thanks. Manufacturers now moving more to a lightweight solution, but a little bit heavier than what you're doing, but light for them. So there's definitely... Mm-hmm. a market for this type of equipment. So I think it's great that you're tapping into this. But the thing I really love about what you're doing is you guys have pretty much built and designed everything yourselves. It's your own burner, which is what, 7 kilograms in weight? It's crazy light.
It is, yes. Actually, I quickly discovered that to have a successful business, actually, at least in the long run, I could not rely on other manufacturers for the supply of material. Because at some point, as I would come up to the market with envelopes as well, the risk of having the supplier switch off the supply of burners, because I was maybe a competitor at some point, it would have put me in a very dangerous situation. So I had needed to face it from the beginning, doing everything in-house. And the second reason was that, as you say, there was a big margin for going lighter, even and maybe particularly in burners. So we came up with something that is well adapted to a TrueSeat balloon up to 2,000 cubic meters, I would say. So, and it's just 7 kilos. We don't need all that heavy, powerful stuff. It's just oversized for what we need. So I just downsized the current technology, I would say, to what I really need. And the result is 7 kilos.
Which is amazing, which is just so nice. The burner, a lot of burners these days are just so heavy for what we're doing in sport ballooning. It's crazy. Even like the littlest of the burners, like say from Ultra Magic with the Power Plus, they're still 15 kilos for a single burner. It's quite heavy. Beautiful burner, but quite heavy.
It is. So this was my starting point in the sense that I thought it was the lightest in the market. So I said, let's see where we can go. Of course, it must be said we don't have, we had to arrive to a compromise. So we don't have two pilot flames. No, sorry, two, how are called the, in English, the little pilot flame.
Yeah.
So we only have a single circuit. Mm-hmm. We are connected to two bottles, to two tanks at a time, but it's a single circuit. So you don't have, but it's the way to go lighter. I mean, you have to renounce to something.
Sure, of course. If you do everything the same, it will never be lighter.
Exactly. That's it.
Tell me about the most exciting part of your whole setup, which is the VTU. Can you explain to our listeners what the VTU is?
Sure. So I picked up this quite technical word, and I'm start thinking that it's a little bit too technical, but it describes well what the device is capable to deliver. It sounded to me quite logical a little bit to do something like that at the beginning. I just thought I'm an innocent guy and I took some risk. I said, this should work, you know, when I had it in my mind. So I just tried to do a geometry of device that could really help and assist the pilot in moving the balloon the way he wants, so have its own speed, even if limited, in order to really, I would say, change the rules of the game in some way. This gear with the electric motor and the big propeller, so 1.5 meters propeller, 60 inches more or less, it allows to really turn the balloon on himself, because you have quite a long lever arm if you watch it. The motor is a little bit outside the basket. So when I turn the motor on his vertical axis, I really get a good turn rate of the balloon. Once the balloon is facing the direction where I want to go, I just recenter my rudder and I keep pushing a little bit the button, the throttle button, and I gently move in the direction I want. And it really allows me to constantly land exactly where I want, or globally come out also from situations where you have total lack of wind. It happens often, or when you overfly a power line for 5 minutes and you have the good landing spot 20 meters on your right or on your left, and you just cannot do anything. So it's something more that really it makes overall the experience easier, and it's a really a peace of mind equipment to have. Consider I come from a mountain area here. Yeah. I fly in mountains, been flying in valleys where no balloon has flown before, and I completely understand understand why. I mean, there are not that many landing spots, but I'm confident enough to fly with my thing. And I'm not an expert balloon pilot at all, but it turned out to be something that is simple, but it looks quite effective and easy to use to me, actually. So it works.
And what sort of speed do you get with that? So once you're running the motor at, say, full throttle, if it's calm, what sort of speed does that move the balloon along at?
To be really honest, Adam, so there are two factors. On one side, I have limited the motor to 2,000 RPM.
Okay.
Propeller and motor can go up to 3,500. Okay, mm-hmm. So it's limited right now to 2,000, and I've never experienced full throttle.
Okay.
Because I never needed that.
Yeah.
The second thing is that I didn't yet measure carefully this because I've never flown in zero wind conditions, so I'm not that sure. I would guess something more than 10 kilometers an hour. And at some point, you know, the power and thrust is not a problem. The real problem is the aerodynamics of the balloon, which are really poor. So at some point, I don't want to go into configurations or positions of the balloon that are really unnatural and, might be, I don't know, dangerous. So I'm going up slowly in this power delivery to try to establish the limits that are good and safe for everyone to use.
Sure.
But like it is from its specifications, is more than enough power for quite more. Good thing is that on the other side, doing it this way, I have a long autonomy, a long battery life.
Yeah.
So because I use just a little bit of the potential.
And you chose to go electric as well, didn't you? So I'm assuming that's for two factors. It's the noise. You get rid of that petrol noise and the engine noise, but it's also the weight. It's a lot lighter with electric motors.
Absolutely, yes, it is. But it's. I think I've never took gasoline engines into consideration at all. And even for the ventilator on the ground, to for the fan, we will go electric as soon as possible. We are already experimenting with an electric unit connected to the same.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want something clean that, as you can store it in your garage and in your car. I don't want the smell of gas. Nobody wants the smell of fuel into the car, you know. So the second thing is the size. This is a compact unit. I mean, if you look at it, you know, it doesn't change the geometry, the concept of the balloon at all. Because it's like a small thing. But the most important thing, quite honestly, is the way we use this motor, actually. I use the motor a little bit and often, but not continuously, you know.
Yeah.
So I turn a bit, I push a bit, then I wait. So electric allows you to go when you want, and when you release, it just, you know, switch. It's off,
yeah.
The motor. So you don't have the process of starting up, of warming up.
Yeah.
And of course, you don't have the noise of it. I mean, it's. I've been flying paramotors for a while. I even was a paramotor manufacturer years ago. It's not the type of experience I want on a balloon. I want to keep the experience as silent and as magical as possible. So electric was the way, absolutely.
I think it's a brilliant idea. And I love the way that it folds up, it folds down. So it doesn't always have to sit in that particular configuration. It's a really great idea. It's a really simple. I think you've absolutely nailed it. I think it's a real credit to you. It's absolutely beautiful.
Thank you. Yes, it's simple, but simple things are the ones that sometimes work the best. Right.
So you've got this amazing idea and that you've executed beautifully here. What's your background? So are you an engineer or something like that? Is it in your original training? Like, how do you come along through all these stages to get to where you are now in this manufacturing component? What's your original history?
I love this question. You know, I just came back from Saint-Hilaire, our first show. We just came to live to the public. And I've been asked quite a number of times if I'm an engineer. Well, I think engineers are rational people. And to come out with a project like this, you don't have to be rational, because you just would even not take it into consideration. It's just too risky, too crazy. Nobody did it before. So I think that when, if you go through the education of an engineer, you are done in a way that you would not go that way. So, a creative and very passionate guy with, I would say, a good technical curiosity. But to answer your question, I studied a degree of aviation management.
Okay.
in Spain at the university. So I've always been into aviation since a very young age. So what has driven my nowadays knowledge is rather passion. So it's interest out of the academic field, let's say. So because, you need passion to do something up to this level, I think. So I then worked all my life also in little companies that are in the aviation field. I founded my first own company when I was finishing university. I've been also paramotor manufacturer at the time, so I have like a mixture of self-entrepreneur experiences and working for third companies. And as I said, with the time, I became more and more technically wise due to curiosity, thanks to the very valuable help of internet and free tutorials on YouTube. So nowadays we are in this age where you can learn specifically anything you want to learn if you have the time and the willingness to learn, but it's free and available, the knowledge today. So I took a lot of advantage from that, actually. It's an interesting point. And the other factor is that during my development phase, I got some help where I could not go out with my own solution or idea. I mean, you don't to ask help. I'm the last around in the balloon business, so I was conscious I needed some help, so I got it.
Hi, we hope you're enjoying this episode. Just a quick reminder that you can support Auntie Monkey by going to patreon.com/AuntieMonkey or going to the donate page on AuntieMonkey.com, where you can pledge as little as $1 per episode that will help us get all the software, the hosting, and the equipment that we need to produce better quality podcasts for you. Anyway, enough from us, back to the episode.
So it's been a really, like, it's an alternate approach, isn't it, to getting into the manufacturing of balloons. So you said you were a multi-discipline pilot. So what else have you flown?
Right. So I started very young with the most accessible thing. When you are too young, you need to go into Earthsea models, which I did for quite a few years before I had the legal age to really fly myself. So right after that, I went into paragliding and gliding in Italy.
Okay.
So I did this for a few years. And then I moved to Austria, where I kept flying gliders in the Alps. So it was, you know, every place I visited in my life had a discipline that was more suitable in some way. And then I went into paramotoring as a manufacturer also. And in later times, more recently, I got my TPL, I fly airplanes for fun, let's say. Well, fun, I fly the balloon, and for, I don't know, it's not that fun flying an airplane, actually. I don't know. But I do it. I love the machines, the fact to travel long distances and all of that. So, but from the point of view of the real, from the perspective of fun and of being in the air, ballooning is really the best thing. I mean, it's where the machine has no importance, has no protagonism, and is where it's actually you into the year, and that's it. You have no noise, no cockpit, no vibrations, no instruments to look at. So it's where I really have the most fun, even if today it's a job, but I still enjoy it a lot.
It sounds like you're it sounds like you are completely obsessed by aviation.
Well, I
think I went a bit more rational in managing my obsession, but the term obsession has been the good term for many years. So today, well, I grew up a bit, I have my kids, my family, so obsession is not anymore the word I try to, but definitely it's the big part of my life, that's it, for sure.
And so with your kids, do they, you're obviously flying with them as well, so they must really love the aviation. Do you see this is something that you can have your kids involved in this business and get them involved in that as well?
They are very young, so 7 and 3 years old. And to be honest, it's a bit strange. Since I became father, I don't know if it's normal or common, but I think so among many pilots. I don't feel the same when I go flying, and I'm not comfortable at all flying with them. I don't fly with them. I took my bigger zone once on the airplane, but I'm not proud of it, actually. I don't consider myself enough trained and safe to take my zone with me. It's like a big responsibility thing, I don't know. And for now, they still did not fly with me on the balloon. Time will come, but I'm not in a pressure for that. I really have to feel 100% confident, but the chances are good that balloon will be the machine where I will become confident faster to take my family with, rather than high performance machines where, in case of, I don't know, of an engine stop, you are really not in a good situation, you know. On a balloon, confidence arrives quicker and it's easier to maintain and to keep up to date the confidence of the pilot, I think. So they will enjoy. They are enjoying Fly-Do already. They help folding the wing when they have opportunity. They look at it as a fun thing, of course. Yeah. They are stimulated by the balloon idea, like every kid everywhere. And who knows the future, what will deserve for them.
So you launched the company 2 weeks ago, after 2 years of planning and development. Is that right? 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, just 2 weeks ago, I went live into internet. I started spreading the word in the social platforms, and I launched in the Saint-Hilaire event, which is a major paragliding or free flight event here in France. Yeah. So just 2 weeks ago.
And it looks like the response has been incredible. Obviously, we're having a chat now as well, but because we saw it appear on the internet, we went, wow, that looks amazing. But it seems like the response has been really incredible. Like, have you had people talking to you everywhere about this idea?
Yes, I prepared a little bit of a communication strategy to get the word spread out effectively and to try a little bit to make it, I would say, not viral, but at least, it's becoming viral in some countries. All my videos in Japan, in the metropolitan, they are in the metro, they are watching on mobile phone my videos. I've seen thousands of videos. I was careful enough to keep things secret for a long time. It has been a tough job, actually, because I love to communicate and to share, but it was a good strategy to keep things a secret and do something with a bit of an effect. And the result has been really good. Yes, we have been contacted by, I would say, almost all countries where there is a ballooning scene going on. And I'm having a hard time now managing the logistics of the Albuquerque and answering all the emails. But at least this allows me to look into the future with optimism, I would say. I mean, things will not go super fast. We need to set up gradually good partnerships with like-minded people that share our vision of ballooning as a sport, you know. We really need people that think the way we think.
Yeah.
Otherwise, if we go necessarily through the same channels that are currently established, so maybe things will not turn out the way we want. We really want to create a new market, actually. You know, we are delivering something that is certainly interesting for all balloon pilots that fly for sport. But my belief, my strong belief, is that there is like a virgin market to be created, because ballooning is just magical. It's a nice and safe sport to be done. With the right equipment, it doesn't stay so cumbersome as it was to practice from a practical point of view. So the only thing that was lacking is promotion, maybe a little bit the right equipment, but it's not the point. It's promotion and really transmitting the idea that flying balloon is cool, but do it in the right channels. I mean, I've never seen a balloon manufacturer in Oshkosh, Sun and Fun, Aero in Germany, you know, the big sport aviation shows of the world. Mm. Never a balloon manufacturer was there, because they just don't consider their product like sports product.
Yeah.
So that's it. So we're trying to change the paradigm, and we will see what comes out.
Well, you're really tapping into a whole, as you say, it's a whole other market, because it's such an active sport aviation community around the world, particularly with paragliding and that type of environment. So absolutely, it seems like a really great opportunity, yeah, for people who maybe are a little tired of paragliding, or they want a different experience, to really step into our sport, which is great.
And we are having this type of feedback from the paragliding community. You know, there are paraglider pilots that are becoming a little bit old, or they got scared at some point, mm, in while it can happen. And they see an alternative of something that is much smoother. And also, it's something they can share with their wife. While paragliding was not the thing, because, well, it's seen from female community a little bit commonly like a bit more sporty, mm, or risky, yeah, deal, while well, ballooning doesn't look risky at all. I mean, it will be exciting. So my idea is that the potential of ballooning as a sport is big, actually, with the right equipment and the right communication and the right people behind the promotion in each country. The potential is there to make something bigger than what it is today. It will take time, but well, we are not in a hurry.
That's right. And I think it's really important what you say, because when we talk to a lot of people in these interviews, but also around the world generally, when we go to ballooning events and those environments, one of the things that's always talked about is how the sport, our sport in particular, is aging, and how we need to find new blood to bring into the sport. So I think this is one of the things I really love about what you're doing, is that you're tapping into that different market that we just haven't ever tried to get access to, because it didn't suit them. It was too heavy. It was too cumbersome. It was too complicated.
Yeah, there is one last aspect of this whole movement, actually, that I'm trying to refresh or provocate a bit, as you are saying. There is the certification category. I mean, it's worth in this interview, I think, that we talked just briefly about it, because it's a boring matter, actually. But one thing that makes all sport aviation discipline successful in Europe and overall, also in the United States, I could say in Australia as well, is that flying machines of up to two people of any category, like paragliders or ultralights, as we call them here, or light sport aircraft, mm-hmm, like they are called in the USA, they fall into a different certification category, which makes things much more adapted to the sport and leisure community. So it's not, there are really different situations out there, but the two key points I would name is that those categories are meant to make the owner of the machine responsible of its own maintenance.
Yeah.
So when you buy a product in light sport category or ultralight in Europe, you are typically not forced to go through an established system of companies doing the annuals for you.
Okay.
It's under your responsibility. So, of course, if you have just bought your machine and it's new and you have flown 10 or 20 hours, it's not really worth. You go to a 500 boxes review of the material, which is still new, actually, you know.
Yeah.
So this is the new aspect which is more adapted to a sport public. So we are focusing very much into this light sport category. The other aspect is medical. It's going. It's a very actual issue in the United States,
yeah,
apparently.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, so the light sport category brings again the joy of flying to those that cannot renew or cannot access a medical for one or the other reason. Mm-hmm. But in paragliding, typically, or any ultra light sport here in France, in Europe, if you can drive a car, you can fly one of those two-seat machines of any category. So these is a key point also. If you want to do sport, you really don't need all these complicated environment, legal environment of the certified ballooning, which we have today. So this is the key. We are focusing exclusively in light sport and lower than two persons on board the machines. And it will be a key to make it things more accessible, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's definitely an important component is to reducing that difficulty of getting with all the regulation and making things easier.
Yeah. The interesting thing is that those categories are there, even for ballooning. It's amazing. And they were unexplored, completely unexplored. But you have a light sport category even in Australia.
We do,
there is such a thing. Yes, there is such a thing, but there are no products. The industry is not interesting. As I said, the bigger the better. I understand it. Mm-hmm. But not for us. We focus into that because we want that niche market. But we are happy to share it. Let me send a message to manufacturers. Now, I take this opportunity. The way to do this ballooning thing bigger and better as a sport for everybody is that we compete into it. I don't want this only for Flydo. I mean, I think it's good that we compete, we go into it, and all together we will all benefit from it if we focus a little bit on that and we bring cooler stuff to the market for the public. And I mean, it's the way to go. A little bit of competition is good. It's not a bad thing. So welcome everybody.
Great.
Let's go lightweight. Yeah, let's go lightweight.
Let's go
everybody.
Lightweight. Oh, that's great. So you are about to leave for Albuquerque. That's right. So you'll be at Albuquerque this year.
That's it, yeah. We are making it a little bit last minute, but material is on the way, and we pretty much look forward to open up a little bit the market down there. As I said, there is this medical thing going on, which is might be an opportunity for us. They have the class, the LSA class. I designed the product to meet the specific standard of that class in the USA, which, by the way, is recognized by Australia as well. So actually, it's number one country in visits to our website. It's the USA. So I look forward to this great event. And I'm a bit scared, actually, because the size of this event is so big that I don't know. It scares me a bit. But I will try to promote to do some live coverage from there to see how my experience turns out in Albuquerque.
So will you have a booth or a stand set up somewhere at the field there?
Yes. Unfortunately, however, due to our late entry to the event, this stand will only be accessible to pilots. So it's not where the other manufacturers are. It's only accessible to pilots. I'm not sure where it will be, but anybody going to Albuquerque to see Flydo, we are around there. So ask for us and look for us, or just give me a call. We are on place to show and meet you and meet the people, exchange and talk and have fun.
It sounds great. I expect to see videos of you with your VTU turned on and doing circuits and just flying around in circles around all the other balloons, waving at people. That should get their attention.
Sure. I will try as long as the FAA delivers me the flight authorization. They are a bit scared of this motor thing, let me tell you. When they have seen it, they say, look, we have a look at the machine when it's there, and eventually we deliver you the flight authorization, you know. It's just something like a new, you know, they don't know what to expect, but sure. It will be fun.
It's their job to make sure everybody's safe.
Right. That's true.
Well, I can't say again how happy I am that you're going down this path. I think it's a great untapped market. I can see immediate applications in Australia and particularly in the US, like you say, with the medicals. I think it's just a great idea and it's a great initiative. And I really, really wish you all the best with it. And I hope it, you know, to use a great old joke, I hope it takes off and it's a huge success.
Oh, I really appreciate that. Thank you very much, Adam, for that. I look forward to be there in business still in a few years. I don't need to become big. I need to keep going and, you know, live from something that makes me happy. This is the main goal of behind all the story. But if I can make more people happier also around, that will be much better then.
We hope you enjoyed that episode of Auntie Monkey. Remember, you can also find out more information for each episode at auntiemonkey.com, where we're including some photos and some videos and some extra information about each of our guests. You can also follow us at Facebook at auntiemonkey666 and also on Instagram at auntiemonkeypodcast, all one word. And if you're feeling really generous, you can also support us financially by pledging a donation at patreon.com/auntiemonkey. Where you can just simply pledge as little as $1 an episode and you only get charged when we release those episodes. Anything you can do to support us will really be helpful. Anyway, until the next episode, see you later.